You've just entered Untamed Dimension. Your navigator for this cosmic adventure is Space Ranger Adam O'Reilly, captain of the Starship Psychopath. Now, prepare yourself for planes for Untamed Dimension.
To another mind-cracking edition of Untamed Dimensions, where getting weird is what we do best. Before we jump off the deep end and dive into tonight's show, let me give you a rundown of what we have slated for the days and weeks ahead. Next week, we'll have our old friend and conspiratorial colleague, Ken Thomas, paying us a visit. Ken, of course, is the editor and publisher of one of the finest parapolitical magazines on the scene today, Steam Shovel Press. Then in 2 weeks, we'll be welcoming Eric Stewart, an activist of sorts and a fellow traveler who will share his adventures regarding psychops and psychedelic UFOs. And then to round out the month, we'll have Andrew Colvin, the Mothman photographer, on the show, sharing his compelling observations about certain winged creatures that go boo in the night. So stay tuned. But enough of what's coming. Let's get going. Tonight's guests are Douglas Hawes and Jeff Turner, two gentlemen I featured in an article I wrote a couple years back for Steam Shovel Press entitled "Tuesday Weld is Watching You, the Shocking Truth About Occult Secret Societies in Santa Cruz," which dealt with, among other things, a conspiratorial cosmology involving 60s sex kitten Tuesday Weld, an alleged descendant from a bloodline of druidic witches who secretly influenced such counterculture luminaries as the Beatles and Rolling Stones, exercising her occult powers in the realms of political intrigue. This article also appears in my latest abomination, The Beast of Adam Gorightly, Collected Rantings 1992 through 2004, which is available, of course, at your finer booksellers, as well as signed copies available for purchase at, you guessed it, adamgorightly.com. So navigate there and shop your little brains out, because there's only 17 shopping days left until Christmas. Okay, enough shameless self-promotion. On with the show. First off, I'd like to introduce Douglas Hawes, who will be wearing two hats tonight, one as guest and another as co-host, as Doug graciously agreed to help guide us through these strange and treacherous waters of satanic Illuminati sorcery and political intrigue. Let's see if Doug is there. Good evening, Doug.
Oh, hi, Adam. Yeah, this is Douglas, and good to hear your voice. And I just wanted to say a few things really quickly before I introduce our star guest, Jeffrey Deanne Turner of Santa Cruz. And wanted to mention that in the 80s, Santa Cruz was a pretty wild cultural whirlpool of all sorts of strange energies. And at the time, I was a UC Santa Cruz student, and I attempted to have my own punk rock band and be part of that underground countercultural punk scene that was in Santa Cruz at that time. And lo and behold, in 1997, I ran into this unique and well-informed figure named Jeffrey Turner. And he is one of the most knowledgeable people about cults I've ever met, although I don't always agree with everything he says. He nonetheless is a vast storehouse of knowledge. And Jeff, are you there?
Doesn't look like he's here yet, Doug.
My God, he has done it again. Should we just continue with all sorts of interesting information and insights, and hope he calls in. His phone was busy when I kept trying to call him at the agreed time for our pre-call.
Right.
And I assumed he had called you in early and was just waiting around ready to talk.
No, haven't seen him show up on the board yet. So, yeah, why don't you go ahead and give us some more background. The theme for the show tonight, as I mentioned, or maybe I haven't mentioned yet, is the secret history of the Summer of Love. And what do you think Jeff's going to talk about regarding this theme?
Well, his main focus is on Tuesday Weld, and as you mentioned, he says the Weld family is an old bloodline family that goes back to the British Isles pre-Christian legacy and is one of a number of networked families that keep alive a carefully guarded underground druidic tradition. And in terms of an actual evidence for this claim, I would refer people to this very rare, hard-to-find book called West Country Wicca. And it, in that book, it has a person who describes her initiation into village druidic Wicca circles in Cornwall, England. And she was specifically told that this information was never shared with outsiders and is never, ever written down.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine that in this setting, a secret society could last for generations until somebody actually turns around and squeals on these people, or an insider comes out and goes for, public with the information. It can remain guarded for centuries. And, of course, secret societies are the bane of historians, because historians work with documents. They want actual published records. Secret societies baffle them all the time.
Indeed. And so the bloodline you're talking about, or network, that goes back hundreds of years, what was and is Tuesday Weld's role in all of this?
Well, Jeff claims that the Weld family is like a royal line within these bloodline families. And among these families, all centered in the British Isles, although some have moved to overseas British possessions, including the former British possession, which is now the United States, and continue to maintain these traditions in countries like New Zealand or Australia or Canada or the United States or other places where the British flag has flown. And he says that the Weld family is recognized among these families as like a royal line. Now, the only actual documentary evidence I've seen for that is in a very interesting book about Theodore Dwight Weld from a parallel line of the Weld family. In other words, Theodore Dwight Weld is not a direct lineal ancestor of Tuesday Weld. It's from a parallel line of the Welds.
Right.
There is a Theodore Dwight Weld is a very important person in American history because he was one of the top three or four abolitionists fighting slavery in the period leading up to the Civil War. And he actually was the direct inspiration for Harriet Beecher Stowe's novel, Uncle Tom's Cabin, which remains the number one bestseller in American history in terms of volume sold in relation to the total population of the time. Theodore Dwight Weld, anyway, this book written about him, a scholarly book, and one of the pages of that book, it said that a certain member of his family was very proud that the Weld family could trace its lineage all the way back to the Irish kings. Okay, so we're talking House of Tara, the legendary royal house of Ireland going back into the hoary mists of prehistory.
Right. So that's, as you say, the only real documentary evidence that the Welds are connected to this bloodline. Now, our guest, and hopefully you'll call in shortly, we might have you give him a call here after a while, but how did Jeff Turner uncover this information?
Well, Jeff basically became a Tuesday Weld fan way back in the 70s, and she was a very well-known actress at that time. She had numerous guest appearances on TV shows back in the early 60s and late 50s, and mm-hmm. appeared in dozens of the TV shows that were popular in that time.
Oh, and yeah, then, she was a very hot actress during that period, early, mid-60s.
Oh, yeah, and in television, she was very well known. And her high point in terms of television was when she starred for one season of The Many Loves of Dobie Gillis.
Mm.
And, okay. And when she was in that TV series, she had a national audience. And Jeff, around this period, took notice of her and became a Tuesday Weld fan.
Now, the Illuminati, allegedly or theoretically, are working behind the scenes to influence culture and politics and all these things. And is Tuesday using her stardom as a vehicle?
Well, there's a very interesting aspect of that, and that is the only published account that hints at Tuesday Weld's personal involvement in kind of occultic or mystery, secret society kind of stuff. And that is this rare book published in 1973 called Popular Witchcraft. And in that book, Popular Witchcraft, is a chapter called Straight from the Witch's Mouth. And it's an interview within that book with Anton LaVey, the founder of the Church of Satan. Anton LaVey dedicated his Satanic Bible to Marilyn Monroe and Tuesday Weld.
Ah, I did not know that.
Well, in the interview, he explains why. And in the context of Marilyn Monroe, he says she had this very, like, the embodiment of feminine kind of attractiveness and beguiling desire and that kind of stuff. But when he mentioned Tuesday Weld, he said she's part of the ritual. She is part of the ritual. Okay, and then he goes on and talks about her in terms that shows that he had a personal intimacy with her. Like, he knows who she is on a personal level. It strongly hints, like, LaVey's words seem to indicate that he knows Tuesday on a very personal level, like her character on a personal level.
Yeah.
And he says that Tuesday has been smart to keep out of the public spotlight. She has the wisdom to know that she should not bite off more than she should chew.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes on to say a few other things that are very revealing.
What was he revealing to you with those words, she didn't bite off more than she could chew?
Well, if she has the power that Jeff claims she has, she could easily have pulled strings and become like a major Hollywood star and getting the top roles in major films where everybody would instantly recognize her and everybody would have a poster of her in their house or a picture photo album book,
yeah,
on their coffee table. Well, she never did have had a breakout role, and maybe that was a deliberate choice.
Mm-hmm.
She wanted to have influence, but she didn't want to be too well known.
Yeah, she seemed like she was always just on the verge of really breaking out and becoming real popular, it seemed like. Now, you mentioned Jeff got interested in Tuesday Weld from the old television series Dobie Gillis and started following her career. And, you know, what did he discover in regards to these special powers you're talking about that Tuesday Weld possesses? And what are these powers exactly?
Well, Jeff claims that early on, people in this network of underground families that keep alive this Celtic druidic inheritance, they recognized that she had the gift. They saw early on that she had supernatural powers and clairvoyant giftings, and they knew that she was the one that was called to be the next high priestess of their order. And so early on, way back in 1958, they reportedly tapped her out to be the new queen, the high priestess of the Druids. And some of the gifts Jeff claims she has are that she, in those days she had the ability to levitate or actually kind of like fly. And I've talked to people who have been able to develop those skills.
Mm-hmm.
And other remarkable gifts, like in the area of clairvoyance or distant viewing and this kind of area. So they immediately, early on, sensed that she had the gifting, and they tapped her out to be the next high priestess. And I have no idea who was the previous one before her. Now, an interesting reference to Tuesday Weld in the popular media might be in the 1960s classic show The Addams Family. The original Addams Family, for the first couple episodes, the little girl in the Addams Family, she's about, I guess, 6 or 7 years old. I haven't seen the show in decades.
Wednesday.
Her name in the first couple episodes was Tuesday.
Ah.
And then they changed it to Wednesday.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So, one of the things that Jeff claims is that Tuesday, has a very small amount of African blood, because there were servants or slaves brought up to New England, where the Weld family goes back to the earliest days of American colonial history, and she has a little bit of African blood in her bloodline.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, she went to Rhodesia many years ago, and there's these remarkable towers of basaltic boulders called the Towers of the Flying Men. And there's little kind of carved out holes at the top of these towers of boulders. And supposedly if a person climbs into these and they really focus their powers, they can literally pop out of them in some form of levitation and fly. And Jeff claims that Tuesday Weld went to these Towers of the Flying Man in Rhodesia and was able to carry out this ability of flying from the Towers of the Flying Men. And he says that this is one of the carefully guarded secrets that back in the 60s and 70s, the inner circle of her acolytes were allowed to hear about, but they were not to share these secrets with outsiders.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how did Jeff meet Tuesday Weld? That happened in, I would say, around 1977, when the movie The Serial was being filmed in Marin County. Jeff, and also Los Angeles, I believe, and Jeff actually showed up at the set and got to meet Tuesday Weld at the set for the filming of the movie The Serial. Okay? And by the way, back in the 70s, Tuesday Weld began to move into films, and she appeared in A Safe Place in 1971, Play It As It Lays in 1972, Looking for Mr. Goodbar, The Serial, Who'll Stop the Rain, and a number of films. And she also actually got some critical acclaim. Her movie Play It As It Lays won a prestigious European Film Award. She won Best Actress at the Venice Film Festival at that time.
Yeah, so, one thing I found interesting, there's a couple movies you didn't mention, and one in particular, Lord Love a Duck. And,
oh, yes.
I believe Jeff is of the opinion that there's a lot of hidden symbolism in that movie regarding Tuesday's true role on this planet. And I also saw the movie as well and started seeing all kinds of seemingly symbolic and hidden messages in that movie. I think that was a very important movie as well, and that was earlier in the 60s, and she was in, there's a number you didn't mention as well, a movie, Pretty Poison, with Anthony Perkins, which was quite disturbing, and I just saw The Cincinnati Kid with Steve McQueen, so she was in a number of very well-done movies.
Yes, Lord Love a Duck, Jeff says, remains Tuesday Weld's favorite movie that she appeared in. And in fact, the opening scene finds What is that guy's name?
Roddy McDowell?
Yeah, Roddy McDowell's in like a jail cell or a psychiatric ward,
mm-hmm.
and he's expressing his loyalty and worship of the character that Tuesday Weld plays.
Right.
And it's like, it's very strange. There's psychiatric satire in the movies where they have people being interrogated by aggressive psychiatrists that do Rorschach tests on people. And then there's this scene where Rodney, what's his name again?
Roddy McDowell.
Yeah, Roddy McDowell goes up to the roof of the high school, which is the setting of the movie, and with the character that Tuesday Weld plays, and they actually do this, draw this strange mythical bird on the top of the roof, and there's all sorts of strange symbolism.
What I kind of picked out of that is, if indeed Tuesday Weld is this high priestess of the Illuminati, what I got out of that movie was that Roddy McDowell, his character, was kind of the old guard of the Illuminati, and Tuesday Weld was the new guard who had arrived on scene and basically took over that role. That's one of the things, one of the possible meanings I got out of that movie.
I saw more of a and Jeff would say this, something along these lines too, that he says that this movie was supposed to be the breakout Illuminati youth culture film that was supposed to sweep the nation and help bring about the youth revolt, cultural revolution that the Illuminati desired. And he says that the right-wingers actually confiscated the films in the cans and stole them and made it so that the film could not even be shown at a number of theaters. He says that's a true story.
Yeah.
But what I saw in the movie is Rodney McDowell gets in this fight with this old football stud guy, and they're all Lovers Lane in their old Chevy convertibles.
Mm-hmm.
And Rodney McDowell is clearly this strange, beatnik, kind of weirdo character. He's more cutting edge. He's what the 60s would become. And the football stud, he's like, hey, we run the show here. We're in charge here. And Rodney McDowell uses these karate moves, and he beats up the stud athlete guy, and it's like, hey, here's the new kid on the block.
Mm-hmm.
This is what's cool now. Forget these old football players and this old 50s culture. We have something new. A new culture is emerging where the nerds are going to be cool.
Yeah.
Where the weirdos are going to be getting the girls. And that's what I saw in the movie.
Yeah, this was pre the psychedelic revolution, and that on base value, the movie at times it looks like a, you know, pretty frivolous spoof comedy, but underlying there's a lot of rebellion in the movie and hints at the free love that was just around the bend. And one of the interesting things I think you pointed out to me, that there's a scene where they're out doing some go-go dancing on the beach. Remember that?
Oh, absolutely.
And there's a character who looks like Charles Manson.
That's right. This long-haired beatnik that's just going nuts and is wild dancing on the beach.
And so, you know, maybe all of these were like hidden clues of subliminally influencing was about to happen in the, you know, mid to late 60s with the Summer of Love, which is our topic tonight.
Right, yes. So we should move on to the rock and roll angle, certainly.
Yeah, let's do that.
But real quick, I should mention that Jeff did talk to Henry Jaglom, the director of A Safe Place in 1971, and he also talked to Joel Schumacher, the director of The Lost Boys that was filmed in Santa Cruz in 1986. And both of them confirmed that Tuesday Weld had a unique role, or it had a important influence on the making of their movie. And Jaglom told him, "What is told in this office does not leave this office. Is that understood?"
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the rock and roll angle. Now, what's very interesting here is Tuesday, the word Tuesday, appears up appears in many songs, and you can hear Beatles songs like I Am the Walrus, and it has references to a Stupid Bloody Tuesday, and another line is Pornographic Priestess, and
yeah.
It's one of the most evocative and strange songs of the 60s, and supposedly the cover of the album that I Am the Walrus came out on, Magical Mystery Tour, has like the druidic figure symbol of death, and there's all these strange characters on the cover of the album, and it's a big mystery, like what the heck was going on with the Beatles at that stage of their career.
Mm-hmm.
There's also that song from the White Album called She Came In Through the Bedroom Window, I believe it's called. It's on the White Album. And
came In Through the Bathroom Window.
She Came In Through the Bathroom Window. And then there's that line, Tuesday's on the phone to me, oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, all of these were hints that Tuesday Weld was influencing the Beatles' musical decisions and the directions that they were heading with their whole psychedelic philosophy of that period.
Right. She was like a spiritual advisor behind the scenes, kind of giving them a direction about where the whole cultural movement should be heading.
Mm-hmm.
And another one that's kind of interesting in this regard, of course, is the Rolling Stones and their song Ruby Tuesday. To this day, the biographies or discographies just say the song's about a famous groupie. Jeff claims there's an early Rolling Stone book that's been out of print since the early 70s that actually says the song is about Tuesday Weld. But like a lot of things, Jeff will say something and then he doesn't keep a copy of that book or photocopy the pages that
right.
back up his claim. And that's a problem I've had with him in the past. Nonetheless, the assertion is that Ruby Tuesday is about Tuesday Weld as well. And Jeff goes so far as to say Mick Jagger was one of the highest lieutenants of Tuesday Weld in the Illuminati, that he was like one of her right-hand lieutenants in the rock and roll secret hierarchy.
Wow, that's mind-blowing. Another interesting connection she had, I believe, is with Don McLean, who recorded the hugely popular song American Pie, and that American Pie was about Tuesday Weld, is that correct?
Well, this is the thing. Jeff says that Tuesday Weld and Don McLean were involved at the time that that song was actually written. And the song, of course, commemorates the night when rock and roll died, when the plane went down, taking Buddy Holly and the Big Bopper and Ritchie Valens to their deaths. And Jeff claims that this plane crash in, I believe, late 1958 was actually a prepared event, that somebody, like some mechanic under the control of the druidic hierarchy, sabotaged the plane so it would crash. And it was designed to be the initiation rite of Tuesday Weld to the role of High Priestess of the Illuminati. And this was the initiation rite. Now, the story of the song itself, and remarkably, can almost back up this claim, because it seems like Don McLean is confessing in this song some like deep sorrowful, it's like a deep sorrowful confession. It's one of the most powerful songs written during that era, and it's, I can see how Tuesday Weld might have confessed the truth to her lover, Don McLean, and then the only way Don McLean could deal with this heavy burden of these secrets that were confessed to him was to express it in a song.
And I see, and it was a catharsis for him, and easily his greatest piece of work.
Right, it's like one of the great classics from that era.
Yeah. Hey, I tell you what, you want to try to give Jeff a call, and I can take a break here. I tracked down a couple of the songs Tuesday Weld recorded in the early 60s, and if we want to take a stab at trying to get a hold of Jeff, I could play a tune here in the interim.
Okay, and just we'll be listening in, or at least I'll be listening in, and then we'll just plug right back in a few minutes.
Yep, sounds good.
Okay.
Thank you, Doug. That's
sure.
Douglas Hawes, and he's going to try to get a hold of Jeffrey Turner, our other guest, or he was supposed to be our guest tonight. Hopefully we can track him down. And I have a little ditty here from Tuesday that she recorded in the early 60s, and as far as the name of the song, I'm not sure. I wrote it down somewhere, but I think it's something like You Are the Boy or something to that effect. Let's play it for you now. Take it away, Tuesday. Tuesday Weld, the alleged Illuminati High Priestess, with a tune from the early 60s called Are You the Boy? And we have Douglas Hawes back. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Adam. I tried calling Jeff. It's been busy for the last 30 minutes.
Maybe we're getting some Illuminati interference here.
Yeah, maybe the NSA did a phone lock on his phone.
That's
don't want these secrets to get out.
Indeed possible. So where did we leave off here? We were talking about Tuesday's influence on Don McLean and the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. So I guess I also heard from either you or Jeff at one time that she influenced the Beach Boys, and Jeff had a particular story regarding that. You know the one I'm talking about?
Oh, I have a story about that.
Yeah.
One time, I've never met Tuesday Weld, but one time I indirectly talked with her on a radio call-in show. And what happened was there was this, I was working in this t-shirt silk screening factory briefly in Santa Cruz. And we had the radio on all the time. And they were playing contemporary, actually kind of like more oldies music, really. And they announced this car show that was going on that weekend this was in Santa Cruz, and the car show was going to be going on in Salinas or Monterey that weekend. And they mentioned that they had Tuesday Weld in the studio with them, and she was going to make an appearance at the car show, classic car show. And so I called in, and I've heard that Tuesday sang backup on the Beach Boys when they did the song Barbara Ann. And then she goes, it's true. Yes, I did. I was there. I sang. And so right over the radio, we were dialoguing very briefly during this talking phase of this music broadcast.
Interesting. And so I think the message there, at least what you or Jeff had told me, that Barbara Ann was actually in reference to Tuesday Weld. So the song is dedicated to her.
Right. The Jeff says that the secret about that song is it's really about Tuesday Weld, that everybody in the scene in Southern California knew that she was the person referred to, those in the know.
Now, Jeff has made some rather provocative allegations that Tuesday Weld was somehow behind the Manson family murders.
Right. Jeff says that Charlie Manson and the Manson cult served as her execution squad. I'm not going to make any statements about that. But
heavens.
But this is what's intriguing here. It is a fact that in the months leading up to the murder of Sharon Tate and the LaBianca murders, and I think that was in August 1969.
You are correct, sir.
Well, in the spring of 1969, there was an underground publication that was floating around on the streets of Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood, and it was called Tuesday's Child.
And yes, I remember that. Yeah, when I was researching the book, there was an article about Manson in that magazine.
And it called him Man of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
So very intriguing linkage there.
I must say, in all my researches, and I did about 3 years of research for my book, which is The Shadow Over Santa Susana, Black Magic, Mind Control, and the Manson Family Mythos. You guys know where to buy it at. I never came across any references to Tuesday Weld, but as you've indicated, you know, whether that there's any truth regarding her being behind the Manson family murders and all these other things that Jeff Turner has indicated, you know, whether there is any truth in those things or not, if there is, I guess where I'm going, it's been a well-guarded secret. How has this Illuminati operation been able to keep these things hidden all these years?
Well, they control the media, is the assertion. Now, one thing interesting about Tuesday Weld and the Manson murders is I learned something completely independently of Jeff in this regard. I knew this fellow whose uncle was a former deputy on the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department, and that deputy told this person I knew, his nephew, that Tuesday Weld was one of a number of people that were called in for questioning in the wake of the Manson murders.
Mm.
I mean the Sharon Tate murders. She
yes.
was called in and asked questions.
Well, that's interesting. A lot of Hollywood stars were called in and questioned during that period for a number of different reasons. Some of them may have been at the same parties that the Mansonoids were at, or they felt that they had some connection with Sharon Tate, so they were being interviewed in that regard. But that is indeed interesting. I might have come across that factoid, but at the time when I was researching the book, I hadn't heard any of these allegations regarding Tuesday Wells. I might have researched them further.
Well, there's a number of people that have made claims that, like, secret societies were trying to influence and bring about the counterculture
like supposed links of like intelligence agencies with
Sandoz
laboratories, and with that acid test seen around orbiting around Stanford University. And
It should be mentioned that trying to remember the exact date, but it was in the late 50s that the CIA bought up Sandoz's entire supply of acid they had on hand at that time. Of course, Sandoz was the initial manufacturer of LSD. Albert Hofmann, the creator of the drug, worked for Sandoz, so the CIA, of all entities, bought this huge amount of acid, enough to, I forget exactly what the size of the quantity, but it was enough to dose the entire USA. And during the Summer of Love, during that period, they actually set up safe houses in the Haight-Ashbury and were basically running some MK-Ultra type operations, giving people acid without their knowledge and monitoring their behavior. And ultimately, they were looking for some type of mind control agent, something they could use to control minds. So anyway, take it from there, Doug.
Well, Jeff claims that Tuesday Weld was a principal architect of the Summer of Love from behind the scenes and helped focus attention on it, helped bring it about, helped make sure it got on the cover of Life magazine, one of the Illuminati-controlled publications of that time. And also actually having certain of the major stars of the time under her personal guidance. And for instance, Jeff says in the Jefferson Airplane, it was Grace Slick that was the Weldian of that group.
Yeah.
And then her influence spread to the other members of the band, reflecting off Grace Slick.
One pill makes you larger and one pill makes you small.
Now, in the case of Moby Grape, which Columbia Records in 1967 believed was going to be the next big breakout band that was going to be as big as the Beatles or the Rolling Stones, there was that period where Moby Grape went down to Hollywood and rented a beach house in Malibu, and they appeared in a movie that is a very Weldian kind of movie. It was called The Sweet Ride. It's sort of a beatnik surf movie with all sorts of casts of strange countercultural characters, and the beautiful Jacqueline Bisset in one of her early film roles, and Karen Black, who Jeff claims was a Tuesday Weld priestess of that day.
Karen Black also had an important role in Easy Rider, which was a huge influence on the 60s counterculture.
Yeah, Jeff says that Karen Black and Barbara Hershey were two of her priestesses of that day. There was also a priestess of hers who never became a film star, but briefly hung out with her in Los Angeles in this era, and then later went back to the South Bay where she emerged from originally, where she grew up, and formed a rival cult that ultimately became a bitter rival of Tuesday Weld's Illuminati allied circles. And they had a bitter factional feud going on in the Santa Cruz area at about the time I met Jeff. That's in the context of how I met Jeff, was Jeff was involved in tracking the activities of this this rival cult and its dangerous leader, a much more menacing figure than Tuesday Weld ever was.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff says that the movie The Lost Boys, filmed in Santa Cruz in 86, was a deliberate slap by the Weldians at this rival cult and its cult priestess, who had pretensions of being this vampire queen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the context of in which I met Jeff in the late fall of 1987, because he told me right away he was involved in a circle of people tracking the activities of this cult that
This person of whom we speak,
Christy,
yeah, Christy, she was in fact a prodigy of Tuesday, and Tuesday Weld was grooming her. Is that correct? And then they
at that time used to groom many young stars and people that she thought had talent.
Right. And so, what came out of the psychic war that was going on there? And we're in the late 80s in Santa Cruz, California.
Well, Jeff claims that this person, Christy, and her process church were allied with the World Nazi Network and its bitter feud with the Illuminati, because the Illuminati is focused on the British Isles, has strong ties with international finance, which has been centered in London and New York City for at least all the last century, and in London before that. And the World Nazi Network is more from the European continent, of course, the Nazis, Germany, the Roman Catholic Church is at times a de facto ally.
Mm-hmm.
And I say de facto because both were anti-communists, and the Catholic Church has had bad experiences at the hands of the communists, you know. So anyway, there's this bitter feud going on for world hegemony between the World Nazi Network and the Illuminati, between the two of them. And there were people that played both sides of the fence called the overlap, Jeff calls it. People like Henry Kissinger that had feet in both the Illuminati and in the World Nazi Network camp, or Al Haig, or Zbigniew Brzezinski.
Hey, you got to hedge your bets, you know.
And then there's people that are strictly one or the other, like David Rockefeller, a Weldian, Ronald Reagan, just straight right wing. Illuminati actually tries to assassinate him through mind control. In that infamous incident with John Hinckley, a mind-controlled puppet who was obsessed with Tuesday Weld's protege of the time, Jodie Foster.
Ah.
And by the way, this a week after they arrested John Hinckley, another guy with an obsession with Jodie Foster, who also was planning on killing the president, was arrested in New York City. Edward Michael Robertson, I believe his name was. I wrote his name down somewhere. I take better notes than Jeff does. He was arrested by the FBI a week after Hinckley. He had the arsenal guns. He was planning on killing the president, and he was obsessed with Jodie Foster.
Ah, I'm not familiar with that name, but you see these type of patterns, for instance, both Hinckley and Mark David Chapman had copies of Catcher in the Rye in their possession when they were apprehended following their assassination attempts. And whatever the modus operandi or the trigger may be, you see these patterns, whether they're, you know, using the book The Catcher in the Rye, or they're using somebody like Jodie Foster to control these puppets.
Yeah, and there's that movie Conspiracy Theory with Mel Gibson, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
And the trigger in that movie is the novel Catcher in the Rye. It's a very good movie, by the way. You've probably seen it a number of times.
Mel stole my idea.
Yeah. Oh, did you get in a lawsuit with him, or try to, or publicity stunt lawsuit?
I tried to, but it didn't work. Anyway. getting back to Christy, Tuesday Weld's prodigy, what came out of this war in the late 80s?
Well, Jeff says there was the rise of a third force, and he says it was called the All Nations Movement.
Mm-hmm.
And the All Nations Movement, from what Jeff has told me and from my own efforts to research it, was unique and different. Tuesday Weld had her bedrock, her stronghold in cultural circles, Hollywood, the major media, musical circles, countercultural circles, and she had allies in international finance like David Rockefeller and the Rothschild family, Jeff says.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the World Nazi Network, it has its stronghold in the military and all those secrets that the Nazis traded for leverage to survive World War II with our own defense establishment. Like, we'll give you advanced technology if you cut a deal with us. So they got entrenched in the defense sector, the military. Well, the All Nations Movement bridged both camps. It's both very involved in secret societies, specifically the Sufi movements. And if you look at movies like The Mummy with Brendan Fisher, it's the first time you have a mummy movie in which a secret society plays a central role. I recommend the Mummy to give insights into the Sufi aspect of this new force, the All Nations Movement. And not only that, but the All Nations Movement has definite allies in government and in the secret services, intelligence agencies, and that's something I don't think Weld was ever able to successfully do. So what the All Nations Movement has done is ironed out the differences between the two camps, I believe, and turned many of the ex-Illuminati and ex-World Nazi Network into this new working understanding. And maybe that will set the stage finally for world government. Because before this, you had two factions battling it out, and one controlled indirectly the Soviet Union. The Illuminati helped create the Soviet Union back in 1917, 1918. And then later Stalin turns on the Western allied communist circles that have these connections with New York City and London, and tracks down Trotsky even as far as Mexico. I'm losing my train of thought here.
Well, so
overstepping.
No problem. I do it all the time. So this All Nations Movement, as it's called, is basically setting the stage for a type of New World Order, which is a ugly buzzword to some people, but you're saying, or Jeff is intimating, that this New World Order could be a good thing.
He is totally pro All Nations Movement. He is a loyal supporter of it. He says that the leadership, and I'll just say that in the plural, approached the dynastic families of the rich and famous in the 80s. Families like the Rockefellers, the Welds, the Rothschilds, and say, hey, this is what we want to do. This is how we want to do it. We want a world federation of nations, which is what you've been talking about. We want to have an agreed upon understanding of what is a reasonable basis for discourse between nations. And Jeff uses this term all the time. He says, first of all, most nations of the earth have signed on with the All Nations Movement, and there are a few holdouts. Saddam Hussein was one of them. North Korea was one of them. I guess Iran. Oh, Iran signed on, but they were considered for a long time in what Jeff calls non-compliance. And China signed on, but they're another one that's considered in non-compliance. And if you're fully compliant, you're supposed to have basic respect for human rights and basic a press that allows some discourse in your society.
You're saying the United States signed on?
This is where it started. And France was one of the very first countries to jump on the bandwagon. And the leadership of the All Nations Movement has a special fondness for France. Not naming names. But anyway, I have one confirmation for the All Nations Movement, only one. You want to hear it?
You sure?
Do we have time?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I had a professor at college when I was getting my master's degree in history. He was a professor who taught history of Mexico, and he had lots of contacts. He had a colleague who taught at the University of Guadalajara in Mexico, and that professor told him that governmental circles in Mexico City, they call it in Spanish Mexico DF, Mexico City, were talking about something called the All Nations Movement.
Now,
that's the only confirmation.
Who are your sources? You can name them, can't you?
No. Some things I can't, I don't want to, I never asked this person if I could tell everybody on the planet about what they told me. So
one of the sources is deceased, aren't they?
Harold Freeman.
Yes,
he is. Okay, let's tell some quick stories. Harold Freeman was a old guard New Ager going all the way back to the early 60s. He's one of the pioneers in UFO research in the country, taught the first college course on UFOs in the country.
Oh, that's interesting. Where was that at?
At a small prep school called Williams College. It's now closed, although the campus still is intact in the Berkeley Hills.
Okay, interesting.
And Harold Freeman was very well connected. He had contacts in the Rosicrucian Order, among high-level Freemasons, among Sufis. And he said that he was fully aware of Tuesday Weld's pretensions to leadership of the secret society tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one that confirmed stuff for me, although he would do it in a bleak manner. He wouldn't want to be quotable. He would go, that's true. But he wouldn't, like, go give you lots of stuff to bite on because he didn't want to be quotable.
Right, you couldn't get him on record.
Another person, Joe Salisbury, the former bartender of Poet and the Patriot in Santa Cruz, and a former Army guy, also a field organizer for the United Farm Workers in the 60s, and he's deceased now. He heard our stories in the upper room at the Poet and the Patriot. I had set it up. Jeff and I talked to Joe for an hour. He went up to San Francisco, talked to his Irish nationalist contacts, people who've raised money for friends in Ireland, Northern Ireland. He came back a month or two later, and I ran into him in the parking lot outside the Poet and Patriot, and he said to me, Jeff was completely right. All that stuff about Weld and McManus, it's confirmed. It's true. Jeff was right about that stuff.
Wow. When I talked to you a couple of years ago, you were trying to track this fellow down. Salisbury's his name, but now he's you discovered that he's deceased?
Right. I was trying to arrange an interview for the Jeff Turner film documentary, and unfortunately we couldn't arrange that, and then I heard the news that Joe had passed away.
Tell us a little bit, before we wrap up here, about the Jeff Turner documentary.
Well, that's being filmed by Sean Donnelly, a recent graduate of New York University's film of school, the Tisch Academy of the Fine Arts. He's been involved in a number of productions previously, and he has videos that he's done for bands that are now being played on MTV. And he has quite a resume, and he got fascinated by Jeff when he bumped into him on the streets of Santa Cruz about 2-3 years ago, and he's been working on a documentary ever since.
Entitled?
What's it called? I forget.
I Think We're Alone Now. Isn't it?
I Think We're Alone Now.
And they have a website up. You can get it on there and actually see photo of my guest, Doug Hawes, and our erstwhile guest, Jeff Turner, if you want to find out more about that movie. And closing here, Doug, do we want to blow some more minds and tell everybody who the leader of the All Nations movement is?
No, I won't do that. I'll let Jeff say that, but I will say real quick,
mm-hmm.
Ken Anger, the guy who was an early member of the Church of Satan, told Jeff at the Silver Screen Hollywood Shop in Manhattan about Tuesday Weld's influence and leadership role. He's the author of Hollywood Babylon. He also mm-hmm. did a movie called Invocation of My Demon Brother,
yep.
which had Marianne Faithfull and Mick Jagger's brother as stars.
Yeah, that's right. And let's see, I think that'll do it for us, Doug. Hey, I'd like to have you back on at some point. Maybe I'll do a supplemental edition of Untamed Dimensions, talk about your UFO experience, and maybe we can keep trying and get Jeff on here.
We'll have to kidnap him and bring him to your place.
Give him a ration of you-know-what for me, but hey, I really appreciate you being on the show, and stay in touch. We'll do it again.
Okay, Adam, I will talk to you next time.
Take care, Doug. And thank you one and all for listening from the great American heartland to the dwarf star of Sirius. Until that time, Maxwell. Until that time.
This has been a Filmways presentation, darling.